Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very senior and accomplished tech professional coming for the second time on The Brand Called You from California, USA, Mr. VR Feroz. Feroz, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me again, Ashutosh. It's such a delight to be back again.
Thank you. Feroz is the Senior Vice President and Head of the SAP Academy for Engineering. He's the founder of India Inclusion Summit. He's the co-author of four books. His latest one is Shelf Aware, and his earlier books are Gifted, Inspiring Stories of People with Disabilities, Innovating the World, The Globalization Advantage, and Grit, The Major Story. Given his kind of background, he's been recognized, felicitated, and awarded several times. He serves on several boards, and he has been honored by the World Economic Forum as a young global leader. So Feroz, I'm not going to start asking you about your journey, which I did last time, but I want to talk to you today about the India Inclusion Foundation. Tell me what inspired you to start this foundation and focus on inclusion in India.
So I think I'll have to rewind a little bit to maybe the year 2010 to really talk about the genesis of the India Inclusion Foundation. Hmm. In the year 2010, I was based in Bangalore. I was a managing director of SAP Labs in India, an organization of around 4,000 people at that time. Mm-hmm. I was kind of living the perfectly well-scripted life mm-hmm. of having become one of the youngest CEOs of a global multinational, having married my college sweetheart, and had an 18-month-old son. And I thought this is as perfect as life could be. Mm-hmm. But then, life throws curveballs at you. And it so happened that, while I was having dinner with a friend of mine, mm-hmm. he called me to the side and said, Feroz, is everything okay with Vivan? Vivan is mm-hmm. the name of my 18-month-old son. Mm-hmm. And I said, he's fine. And he said, no, I see that he's not making eye contact and he's not responding to his name. So if you call his name, he would not respond. Mm-hmm. He said, why don't you go and test him? And I didn't really understand what he was talking about, but he said, maybe check for autism. So I was a little surprised. I'd never heard the term autism before in my life. So I must say, when I shared this with my wife, she was not amused at all. She said, no, Vivan is perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with him. Mm-hmm. And but we started going to the doctors, and after 3 months of going from one doctor to the other, the doctor actually called me and my wife and said, yeah, he is on the spectrum. We don't know how severe it is. It's too young, but start him on therapies. And at that moment, our lives changed.
Wow.
And I remember driving back home, me and my wife literally didn't speak to each other at all. It was a big shock. I went back home, locked myself in a bathroom and cried. And I said, here goes my well-scripted life. And I went through the next few months, I went through the five stages of grief, right? Right mm-hmm. from denial to finally acceptance. But it was one of the most difficult moments in my life, those 2 to 3 months. But I think there was one phone call from my mentor, Dr. Kiran Bedi, that changed my life forever. While I was really at the lowest moment, I called the valley of despair, she had called me and said why I was not responding to her mails and messages. Mm. And I said that Vivan is diagnosed with autism. I don't know what to do with him. I don't know what the treatment is. And she said something that was really had a huge impact. And she said, Feroz, most people spend their whole life not knowing what their purpose is. Mm. You're incredibly fortunate the purpose found you.
How amazing.
And she said, you could either spend the rest of your life taking care of Vivan, which is your first responsibility, but you could also do more. You could also contribute to the upliftment of a community which is marginalized. Mm. Disability community is one of the largest in the world. 1 billion people are disabled, but most of them have very difficult conditions. And she said, you could use the rest of your life to uplift this community. And use your network, your power for a greater cause. And mm. that gave me the idea to really start my foundation, which is focused on spreading awareness about people with disabilities.
Incredible. And you said there are over a billion people in the world,
yeah.
which is
Yeah.
one out of eight people have a challenge.
Yeah. So today, disability, people with disabilities are the largest minority in the world, a billion people, as rightly said, one is to seven or 1:8, however you call it. And, you know, this is a one community that all of us will eventually become part of. If nothing else, old age will make you part of the disability community. So it is the largest minority in the world, and it cuts across every religion, race, everything.
Absolutely. Nothing matters except what, you know, our bodies are. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. So let's talk a little bit then about the India Inclusion Foundation, Feroz. Yeah. You've told me an amazing story about Vivaan, and thank you so much for sharing it.
Thank you.
What are some of the core objectives of the India Inclusion Foundation and Summit, and how has it evolved over the years?
Yeah. So if you look at it, let me tell you what we were trying to do. And I must admit, we have evolved since we started, right?
Yeah.
When I started it, I really didn't know much. But I remember having this fascinating conversation with Dr. Arun Chowdhury, who, as you all know, was a former cabinet minister.
Yeah.
He has a son on the who's profoundly disabled. And one of the things he said is, Feroz, we will never be able to change the situation about disability in the country unless we change people's mindsets. Unless we change the narrative around disability, no change is going to happen. You know, he said, if you look today, the 2016 disability law is one of the strongest in the world. But I don't see a lot of change that has happened because of that. The change has happened, but I think it's pretty slow.
Right.
It's because of people's mindset. So he said, spend your time to change people's mindset. Instead of seeing disability as a taboo, how can we celebrate people for who they are, whatever their condition is? And that's how we started the summit. The summit is basically a two-day celebration of people's disabilities.
Wow.
We're not going there to ask for sympathy. We're going to go there and say, you know, we can own the world as much as anybody else. And that is the mission of the India Inclusion Summit, which is to spread awareness and to celebrate people for who they are.
Fascinating. And Feroz, what are some common misconceptions about inclusion in India, and how are these different in the US?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've been very fortunate to have lived in India, Europe, and US. So I can kind of compare and contrast what's the various differences. So let me kind of put a few fundamental differences. If you look at the East and the West, I think the former Prime Minister of Singapore explained it beautifully. He said, in the East, we live an interdependent society. In the West, we are an independent society.
Correct.
And the same applies for disability as well. The goal of people with disabilities in the US is that you should be able to live independently. It doesn't matter what your condition is. Can you live an independent life? Which means the society has to create an entire infrastructure that you can live independently.
Right.
In India, we are an interdependent society. Most of us don't even talk about independence. We live with each other. We are like, okay, if you have a person with disability in the family, it's okay because there are other family members who will help you live through it. Now, there are pros and cons of both of it. But purely from an awareness point of view, I would say the US and the UK both are at least 20 years ahead of India. You know, the infrastructure is taken care for people with disabilities. There are policies that support people with disabilities. Just to give you one simple example, because my son is profoundly challenged, he requires 100% care, which means that my wife is actually not able to do a job. She was actually working also as a very senior person at SAP, but she quit and she's full-time home giver, you know, taking care of Vivaan. What the state does is pay her a salary.
Amazing.
They pay her for being a caregiver because it's a way to compensate her for not able to being able to work. So caregiving is seen as economical part of the job. It's not, it doesn't have zero value. There's an actual dollar value to it, which I think is so progressive,
right?
So I think those are some of the big differences that I see. I think in India, if you exclude urban cities, we still have a lot of catching up to do. I've seen rural India, we're still years behind. It is still seen as a taboo. People don't talk about it. You know, there is a certain sense of kind of a disgrace to being disabled. So I think that we have a lot of work to do.
Very well said. And Feroz, how do you see the cultural perception of disability changing in India due to the efforts of your foundation and all the visibility your summit gets?
Yeah, I think, you know, today I can very proudly say the summit by itself is probably the largest in the world today. You know, there's nobody who does an event of that scale. You know, we've had the who's who to come and talk about it. Again, when we started doing the summit, our goal was not to make it the best event for people with disabilities. We said it has to be the best event, period, because our goal was to say that anything to do with disabilities can be as good as anybody else. We don't want it to be seen as the best disability event. We want it to be seen as the best event of celebration. So I think what it has done is it's created a certain brand of that people with disabilities can do high quality stuff. We do product launches. For example, last year we launched a product where, you know, one of the entrepreneurs built a symbionic arm, which is functional, cost around $50,000 in the US. They built it for $3,000 in India, right? So it's a platform for product launches. It is a platform for inspiring stories. It is a platform to show what is, you know, new ideas and so on. So at least it has created a huge sense of visibility, and we've put the spotlight on people with disabilities. They are not seen as marginalized anymore, because a lot of time you go to any event, there is a D&I section at the fag end of the day. Right, there's one section, it seems like a checkbox item. Here we say no, D&I and disability and inclusion and diversity and inclusion is front and center. It is not an afterthought. It is not at the edges. It is at the core.
What a great response. Thank you. My next question is that, you know, you've spoken a little bit about what the government can do.
Yeah.
But even before that, I wanted to ask you, what changes would you like to see in the Indian education system to make it much more inclusive?
It's a very good question, Ashutosh. When I look at I'm now able to compare the education system in US versus in India. The reason, Ashutosh, I moved to the US is the following. When my son was 5 years old, he could not get admission in any school because he was profoundly challenged and he was nonverbal. So he couldn't speak. And a lot of schools thought he was deaf and mute because he couldn't speak. I said, no, he's cognitively sharp. He just doesn't communicate using the way you and me communicate. Yes, we have to find a different way of communication. We came to the US, he goes to a public school, he's in ninth grade. Actually, when he was in eighth grade, he finished ninth grade maths and science already, right? If he weren't coming here, he would be sitting at home most of the time. So I think the education system is the starting point. We have to make our schools truly inclusive. And when I say truly inclusive, I meant it should not be that there's a separate section for people with disabilities. People with disabilities should be able to sit in the same classroom, and we have to make accommodations for them so that they can be part of the educational and learning journey. So, you know, there are two different schools of thought here. There are people who say, can we do a special needs class versus doing a classroom which includes special needs children. I think the later one is much more progressive, but I think we still have a long way to go. The other thing is, I think every teacher should be a special needs teacher. There is no the idea that you need to have a separate set of people who are special needs teachers goes against the principle that you should be able to teach any student.
Correct.
Right. So this and so I believe that every teacher should be a special needs teacher, which is, again, a far-fetched idea. But yeah, I think we should aim for that.
Very well said. And Feroz, as a tech leader in your own domain and a very senior tech leader, how are you leveraging technology to support inclusion?
So, you know, the way I see it is that from a technology point, technology is a huge ability to make it a level playing ground. You know, today, as what I said, my son today requires a 1:1 teacher to trainer. You know, that's his ratio. So he needs one teacher to train him. Now that is not scalable, right? You can't have millions of teachers to just handle special needs children. That's where technology helps. Technology can massively help to scale. When at SAP itself, we ran something called the Autism at Work program. We were front runners for that, where we said that hiring people who are on the autism spectrum makes business sense. This is not charity. This makes business sense because they think differently. They see the world differently. If you can make accommodations for them, you know, they can be meaningful contributors to businesses as well. So I think there are two answers to that. Number one is that people with disabilities should be part of technology companies. And the second is we should have more solutions for the disability community. And one of the things we do at my foundation is support social entrepreneurs who are trying to solve a problem in the disability space. Because one of the biggest myths is that the disability space is a non-viable space because people with disabilities can't afford solutions. So, you know, they think it's a small niche area, but like I said, 1 billion people are disabled. So if you can build a solution for 1 billion people, you'll build a solution for the other 7 billion too.
Interesting. You also have an amazing initiative called Everyone is Good at Something.
Yeah.
Tell me more about this initiative.
Yeah, I think the everyone is good at something is the tagline for our foundation. But 3 years ago, I think it was in the year 2000, we realized one big gap in what we were trying to do. A lot of our initiatives were urban centric. We were doing it in Bangalore and the cities, but we said that we were not reaching rural India. And everything was in English. And we said, if you want to capture a big part of the Indian population, you have to do something in their regional languages too. So inspired by something like Humans of New York, which, as you know, is kind of a photo campaign, you lead with a photograph and tell the story of everyday people. We started Everyone is Good at Something, where our goal was to tell the story of all 21 disabilities as per the RPDWA Act and across all 28 states and all the union territories. So we have a photographer who's now in his fourth year of traveling every part of the country. And we have a writing team of around 20 people who basically tell the stories of everyday people with disabilities every week. And, you know, we are able to share that story on a week-to-week basis. Again, the idea is to spread awareness. That's the core goal. And the stories are translated into 5 regional languages so that people can listen to it or read it in their own regional languages.
Amazing. Thank you. I have time for 2 or 3 more questions, Feroz. Yeah. My next question is about your book, The Invisible Majority, India's Abled Disabled.
Yeah.
Tell me about your journey and the impact of writing this book.
Yeah, this is, you know, people often ask me, how long did it take to write the book? And my answer is, it took me 10 years to think and 3 years to write. And, you know, since I started this Inclusion Summit in 2012, I was fortunate to meet outstanding people. And so I said, you know, our goal was to make India inclusive by 2030. And what does that mean? That means that every person in this country, all the 1.4 billion people, should be aware of their rights if they're a person with disability. Because as I said, we have a very compelling rights act, but nobody knows about it. So how do I spread awareness that if you're disabled, this is your right. You have the right to education. You have the right to find a job. You have a right to make a meaningful life. How do you spread that by 2030? That was the goal. And so our idea of writing the book was to make a blueprint for making India inclusive by 2030. So that was the goal. That is this a bold goal, which we is it kind of a, you know, feel good vision statement, or is there a path to that? And so I wanted to put together a framework of how we can make the country inclusive by the year 2030. And I was very fortunate that it was released by the Vice President of India, and His Holiness the Dalai Lama wrote the foreword for the book. And, you know, it was a number one bestseller in Amazon for 6 weeks. So I basically put everything that I learned in 10 years, and I said, here is a blueprint of making India inclusive.
Oh, wonderful. How wonderful. 2 more questions for you. My next question is based on all the work that you did for this book. How do you engage and inspire the next generation to continue the work in the field of inclusion?
It's a good question, but I also, you know, the two things. One, the most encouraging thing is I find that the younger population are so much more aware.
Yeah.
Maybe it is the social media, it is the, they're just awareness about not just disability, but all form of inclusion is so much more than our generation or many of us. So they actually take it as a matter of fact. They're not fussing about disability or gender. They're like, what's the big deal? They are all the same. So that's the good part of it, that the younger generation, they get the message right from the early stages. So I think once they grow up, they will grow up, or they will make our societies a lot more inclusive. What is challenging, though, and this I think is the biggest problem, is to find meaningful employment for people with disabilities. Because, you know, if they don't have any education, they end up being, you know, employment is very less. The data shows that 95% of the people with disabilities have no meaningful employment.
Right.
And so that becomes a huge burden on families and quality of life. So, you know, my hope is that, you know, the younger generation takes up the mantle of fighting for equality way more strongly than what many of us have done. I think our generation didn't do enough. I feel that, you know, we were probably not even aware of it. But I think the next generation. So I'm a lot more optimistic, Ashutosh, but a lot more work needs to be done.
Absolutely. And so, you know, I think you're so right. And every generation, every younger generation, and I'm a generation older than you, but every younger generation gets more and more aware. And that gives me a lot of hope.
Yeah.
Feroz, my last question to you, and this is about your latest book, Shelf Aware.
Yeah.
I'd be grateful if you show us the book which you have just behind you. Tell me about this book, and what was the motivation for this book?
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, this is the book. I hope you can see it.
Yeah,
you know, you can see the background as well. So you can probably know that I'm a book lover. I have around 3,000 books. Many of them are rare collectibles. A lot of time people, when they see me on Zoom, they ask me if the background is real or fake. I say it's real background with real books.
Yeah.
But, you know, the idea of the book was pretty simple. I write a biweekly column for New Indian Express, and it's called Flyleaf, where I take a topic and write 650 words in the backdrop of books. So that's what my column is. It's been running for the last, I think, 7 years now. And so when my publisher asked me to put kind of an anthology, a collection of my essays, my idea was not to recycle them, but to upcycle them. I said, what's the point in publishing what's already published? Why not take something and increase its value? So the one way of doing that was that every column is represented by, in an artistic way, by a person on the autism spectrum. And so this book is a combination of art and literature coming together with a social message. So the artwork is done by 5 artists who are on the spectrum, and all the proceeds from the book go to the artists. You know, this is one way to give them a livelihood. So that's what the book Shelf Aware is about. It's a collection of 100 essays.
Amazing. So I'm going to ask all our viewers and listeners to go and check out Mr. V.R. Feroz's book. I'm going to order my copy soon after my conversation just now. Feroz, you're also showing me a 3.5-minute video which about this book and the work that you're doing, which you're going to launch on the 2nd of April, you told me. So we're going to provide a link of that video in on the brand called You as well. So we'll ask everyone to go and check out that video. But parting last words about the video.
Yeah, I just want everybody to watch the video, get moved, hopefully, and you know, support the book. And you know, the only thing I keep saying as a passing remark is, make literature your religion.
Absolutely right. Well said. And on that note, Feroz, thank you so much for speaking to me about your own journey. I think what you have done through your own personal experience for such a large community of people is really laudable. And I can just say thank you so much for all that you are doing. Thank you for all the books that you're writing and how you're highlighting some of the challenges. Thank you again for speaking to me, and good luck to you.
Thank you so much, Ashutosh. All the best to you too.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the brand called You Videocast and Podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.